Hello and welcome to episode 141 of the Talking Talkie podcast. I am Chris Ballard in snowy Connecticut, USA, and I'm joined today by a newbie, Tom Diamond. Tom, how are you?
Nice to be with you, mate. Good to be on the pod. Good to make a debut. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm very well. Like I say, it's kind of snowing a little bit outside. The temperature's gone down to about freezing in the last few days. It will get worse before it gets better. I'm not playing football because I've pulled a groin muscle. Who knew I had them?
So we can add you to the injury list then, which I'm sure we'll talk about.
Yeah, and as I get older, dude, I used to be like I'd fall over when I was 21 and I bounce back up. But now if I pull something, I'm laying down for half an hour and then you don't see me for 3 months. Been 3 months for this. But we have a lot to talk about because we haven't been able to do a podcast in the last couple of weeks. We have three games to go over. Luckily, they were winning games, which is nice. So let's start with Eastbourne on November the 28th. Seems such a long time ago now.
I know, yeah.
One to us. So, Tom, what did you make of that one?
Yeah, I mean, I think that game is probably what we expected the National League South to be like this season. I mean, I think before the start of the year, and obviously we've talked about this quite a lot on other podcasts and stuff, but before the start of the year, I think we were all pretty confident after the retained list and signing people like Ash. And so I think kind of that 4-1 victory was probably more like what we were expecting to see and what we haven't really seen at all. I do think, obviously, important to mention Dolan, who's obviously now gone. I mean, I think he was class in that game. And, you know, that first goal as well just kind of summed up what he's done in his short time at the club. But I mean, it's hard to go too overly positive because, yeah, I really don't think they were a particularly great side. We didn't really get pressed on the ball massively, I don't think. So we did have a lot of time. And obviously there was the red card as well, which was kind of hard to tell. I mean, from kind of the angle I saw it from, it looked like a red card. But yeah, with the player kind of in between the camera and the player, it was hard to tell. But yeah, overall, obviously, you know, good to bounce back after the Dartford game and get 3 points and score 4 goals. Still no clean sheet though, which is frustrating. And we were just talking about that before we started, weren't we?
I mean, much like my mother in the 90s, anything for a clean sheet. It's amazing that we seem to be so consistently terrible in defence.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been saying it since before the season began, like, oh, we look a bit light in defence. And so it's proved. If we don't get out of this division, it won't be the fact that we're not scoring because we're scoring plenty of goals.
Yeah, we are, yeah.
You know, when we're unable believe to get... Yeah, sorry, we can't get more than one or two. We're gonna ship one or two. Like you say, Eastbourne weren't very good. That being said, we said that a lot this year, and we've lost a game. Teams who haven't been very good.
Yeah,
so
definitely,
it's nice that we were able to pull away again after conceding the penalty, which it seemed a little bit dodgy at the time.
Oh yeah, 100%.
I've only watched it on the highlights. It wasn't there, obviously, but so often this team, you kind of think, oh God, you're 2-1 now. Here we go again. And actually, we saw it in the most recent game as well, where we concede after being 2-0 up and are managing to get away with it. So that's encouraging. Callum Dolan has been, or well, he had been great in his time with us. The fact that he's been recalled is, I think it probably says more about the situation at Fleetwood than it does about how good Dolan may or may not be.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Got injured. It's just a shame because you suddenly, you know, you start getting some consistency. Him and McGavin seem to be working pretty well. We'll get on to McGavin again later on, I'm sure, because he seems to have a one-man attempt to win a Christmas award this year. and then to finish it off, Bradley Ash getting a goal, who's had a pretty rough go of it. You know, I think
he has, yeah, but 3-3 now, I think it is. So good to kind of good to see that revival. I like you were saying with the defense being quite weak. I thought it was interesting. I watched the press call today with Aaron Downs. And he said in that he thought every defender who's played this season's had a good season so far. And I was struggling a little bit with that comment. I know we've obviously had people like Tomlinson who maybe have exceeded expectations slightly, but I would say, you know, as a unit, we haven't kept many clean sheets at all, have we? So, yeah, I wasn't too sure about that one, but...
I don't think you can necessarily lay the blame at any one individual's feet.
No.
Like, Tomlinson's had a good season. Marshall's been pretty good in a few games. He's now turned to Cafu somehow. Moxie is Moxie. He'll be great in pretty much every game. It's just, it feels like in the last couple of games, even though we've shipped a couple, it feels like we've got a back four unit, which we haven't really had before.
Definitely, yeah.
And, you know, I think Tomlinson, it's a good season for him to play, because he'll see a lot of, most of the reason early on in the season was that we didn't have midfield. We were being overrun in midfield. We didn't have Lapsley, we didn't have Hall, we still don't have Hall. There's no Dawson, appears to have been taken out behind a Bryan shot. I don't know. You know, we're so lacking in pace to start with in midfield, we were unable to stop the hordes of the enemy coming towards us. But now it's improved a little bit. We are scoring goals. So 4-1 against Eastbourne was encouraging. I think we just said means nothing if we don't then go and beat Tonbridge.
Mm-hmm.
Which we did on the Saturday, 2-1.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that was necessarily a game for the neutral. I know Johnson talks a lot about the entertainment business. I'm not sure if that game was particularly an entertainment business style game. But yeah, I mean, and again, going back to kind of the press call from today, Downs is talking about togetherness, and maybe we're starting to see that come together a little bit more now. You know, yes, it's still not pretty, but we are starting to grind out results, which we weren't doing earlier in the season. You know, I look at games like Dover, Hemel Hempstead, where we were winning and gave it away. You know, now we do seem to be grinding out results. We seem to be holding on. So, I mean, that's good to see. I think the only thing I would say about that game as well, I wanted to add, was I think Ash played up top on his own in that game. I wasn't there, but just from what I've seen, I'm not a massive fan of, I would say. I don't think it's the sort of league or kind of we have the style of play to have a player like Ash up there on his own. But I mean, yeah, very happy with the win. And to get another one after the win at Eastbourne is, yeah, good to get on a little run.
Yeah, and again, you know, we were a goal up early on. Dylan De Silva, who I've been very critical of, I still don't I think he's very good. But it was a nice goal. And then we conceded just after about an hour. And you think, oh, fucking hell, here we go again. But we scored not long afterwards. So again, you can't really complain about the character of the squad. And I think early on in the season, everyone's like, oh, Johnson's lost the dressing room. Which I think at our level is ridiculous, because they're all players playing for mortgages. You can't lose
a dressing room. They're fighting for a contract every year.
You can have that. But they've shown character in coming back. It wasn't the best game I've ever seen. It also wasn't the worst game I've ever seen. and I think Ash on his own is not something that you would be wanting to do every time. I know it was him and Williams in the previous game, and that hadn't really worked. Like they were making the same runs. We do miss Jarvis. I mean, if we can get Jarvis back and Dawson, I feel like we're really going to kick on. Whether or not we catch Ovals, a whole other conversation, but
yeah,
we're far from being the worst team in this division. We're definitely in the top four or five, given that we started so badly. I think the fact that we have a positive goal difference now is good. For a while we didn't, and I do like Johnson, because when he wins, he talks about being an entertainer. And when he loses, he says nothing about entertainment. Like, we were shit, but at least it was entertaining. Could we let him find goal? He's never going to say that. Two in a row. This was, you kind of at the point of the season now where the games are coming pretty thick and fast.
Our injury list is kind of showing
our injury list. Actually, in that Tonbridge game, I think we lost 3-2 injury in that game too, didn't we? We lost Marshall. We lost De Silva, I think, with a dead leg.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the other one now as well. I think it was actually, it might have been you actually. I remember seeing a tweet. I think it was you that we have used all of our subs in the last two games through injury. So we haven't actually been able to make a tactical sub in the last two games, which is,
given how the tactics have gone, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe we can't mess around with tactics and we just have to have able bodies on the pitch.
Yeah.
That's always a little bit discouraging. But, 2 out of 2, then we moved on to the game on Tuesday. At home again, I've just completely blanked out on who we played.
Weymouth. So
literally looking at the highlights.
I was going to say it's been a long day, but you're 7 hours behind me, I think, roughly.
So. I was up at 5:30 going to the gym.
Oh, there we go. That's fine then. That's fine.
I fucking hate going to the gym. I have to put the parental advisory notice on this meeting, because just to say again, I fucking hate the gym. Tom.
I was also part of the 5 a.m. crew last year, but I've left that now. Everyone says it gives you your evenings back, but it doesn't, because you get to kind of 6 p.m. and you're just absolutely dead.
So yeah, tired.
It doesn't give you your evenings back whatsoever. That's an absolute myth. So yeah, I'm completely with you on that. It's my first pod, so I'm not going to swear because I want to get back on. However, I do completely agree with you. Yeah.
Just anyone, so, you know, people weren't, aren't watching the Zoom call, but he definitely just flipped me the finger twice then. So, no, he didn't. So Weymouth, Weymouth, one of those teams in this division, you know, they barely escaped relegation last season, despite having 17 goal Brad Ash in there.
I was going to say, Brad Ash saved them last year, didn't he? Yeah.
And I think it was fairly comfortable in the end. I would say that I thought Weymouth were a little bit overzealous in their tackling.
Yeah, they actually
got hit twice early on. That saw him off. They did eventually have someone sent off, which I think was only fair. But
Ash as well went off to an impact injury.
Yeah,
And Collins, which is a shame. Yeah, and then obviously we had the Stobbs one, which wasn't an impact, I mean, just again going back to what was kind of said today in terms of, with regards to injuries, Stobbs sounds like it might be quite a long-term one, which is a shame, because with the absence of Dolan, it looks like Johnson was going to Stobbs as the new kind of central midfielder, new part of that kind of unit. So yeah, shame about that. But look, it does sound like Lapsley and Ash is kind of just impact injuries. I mean, especially Lapsley's pretty tough cookie, isn't he? I imagine he'll be back as quickly as he can be after that. So yeah, hopefully those two aren't out for too much longer, because with the way we finished on Tuesday night, we were looking a bit light for Saturday. I was dusting my boots off. I was the phone's on loud if I am needed.
Yeah,
I only live 20 minutes away from Froome, so I'm more than happy. Yeah, I'm more than happy.
I think Marshall was coming back because I think he was suspended for the Tuesday game. But Callum Thomas came in eventually. He came on for
Nice to see him make his debut, wasn't it?
And I think it showed you that De Silva wasn't fit because he was on the bench, but then when Stubbs got injured, De Silva was not called off the bench.
Yeah, I think they said after the game they just didn't want to risk him. I mean, there would have been a lot easier debuts for Callum Thomas probably than that game. You know, coming on in, for example, the Eastbourne game 4-1 up would have been a hell of a lot easier than coming into what was a high-pressured, kind of aggressive, feisty game. So yeah, credit to him. And I think he's only 18, isn't he? So yeah, you know, going in the center of defense, I mean, having Moxie next to you is probably pretty nice when you come on for your debut. But yeah, happy with that. And it's just nice thing to score good goals. Like, I mean, it's another McGavin one. You know, he's racking them up this season now, isn't he? But yeah, I mean, and the last one as well, I mean, we were saying before we came on, it was a bit like the Scunthorpe goal last year, but I also think Halstead's got to get a lot of credit for that assist.
That was a very good.
Yeah, and all the kind of Johnson teams we've had have done that. The goalie's done that all the time. Sean McDonald used to do it all the time. Run out to the edge of his box as soon as we got it and boom it. I always used to be a little bit against it because I just thought we used to give the ball back to the opposition every time. But so I'm glad I've been proved wrong slightly and we've scored from one of them. And yeah, he took that well. And I believe that's Collins' first goal of the season as well. So yeah, that's good to see. I think it might be. But well, first league goal anyway. But I've actually been surprised by Collins. I know people have talked about it already this year. I think that he's a lot better than what we've seen. I do think he's a good footballer, and I think he will come good. I know he's probably not played up to the expectations we were expecting, and he obviously has played in the Football League, so we'd expect a lot more, but hopefully he proves people wrong second half of the season. I personally rate him. I think he's a good player. He's an athlete. And yeah, I think he will come good. I'm confident on that one. And hopefully getting that goal will give him a bit of confidence as well.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, we've gone over it a little before in previous podcasts, but when in pre-season we signed both Stobbs and Collins, we thought, wow, those are both brilliant signings because they got relegated. And it's taken them both a while to get into it. I'm still not entirely convinced on Stobbs. I don't think we see him back until February because the way he pulled up, that was a proper hamstring tear. That wasn't just a twinge. That's a shame.
I've been kind of in kind of match reports and stuff I've done before. I've always been a little bit critical about our injury list. It just seems every year we've got kind of an endless injury list, and I don't know if it's bad luck or whether we need to be, you know, changing our training. I don't know. I mean, just coming, like, pulling up with muscle injuries, you know, quite often is frustrating. And I look at back to previous seasons as well. We've always had kind of such a large injury list. And yeah, I mean, I don't have a solid theory for why that is the case. But yeah, I mean, it does just seem that it is a bit never ending, the kind of injuries that we get. So again, it might just be bad luck, yeah. But yeah,
I think that there has been a perceived wisdom with Johnston's squads, even in the Ashton Gate season where we were cruising until we lost half a dozen guys at the same time, that he's overtraining them. I don't know if I buy that necessarily, because certainly this season, most of our injuries have been impact injuries or sustained during a game. I mean, Holstead, I think, said this morning that he couldn't remember a week before his last head injury. That's really not great.
No, not.
And you can't really blame Johnston for that. I think it can be two things. The fact that we're in a competitive division and we are, when I say competitive, it's not good, but the teams are coming to play us, and for a lot of them, we're a cup final.
It's the biggest game, isn't it?
Yeah, players are going in a little bit overzealously compared to what they would against other sides in the division. I think we also have players who have a history of injuries anyway. So Lapsley's an example. He's been injured on and off his entire career. Probably why he's not playing at a higher level. So, you know, it's kind of like, well, do you take the chance on a guy who's clearly too... I'm not using that as an example, but, you know, do you bring in a guy who's clearly too good for the division and hope he can get 25 games? Or do you bring in a guy who's for whom this is the exact level and you'll get 40 games of 4 out of 10?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, I would hope that things would clear up. I know, and we'll get onto the weekend's game, but I hope that we're able to rest as much as possible, because we have some battles coming up, certainly over the Christmas period, which... I love. I mean, I think Christmas football is brilliant, and I don't.
And they're must-win games as well. I think, you know, I think if we can keep this run going as long as possible, I sense that the feel, not necessarily a feel-good factor. That's probably going a little bit too far, but I just think you the more you build wins together, the everyone can start to come back together a little bit more, and yeah, I think if we can keep that going over Christmas, that will really help.
Everything's
feel a bit better.
It's always been a part of Johnston's sides, not just here but anywhere, where, you know, they'll have a few dodgy games and then they'll get on a run of four games and it becomes five games, and 10 games, and then 15 games, and then suddenly you're winning the division or you're in the playoffs. And I think we've seen that at Torquay. I think I can see that happening with us. I don't think we have anything super scary coming up in the near future.
No, not at all.
We haven't got to worry about Yeovil for a while. I didn't pay Yeovil until April, actually.
March or April, yeah.
Is just secure our place in the playoffs. If it turns out that Yeovil have a bit of a nightmare and suddenly we're near them, great. I think the majority of the fans have accepted that we're playing for second in this division. If you said at the beginning of the season, would you take going up to the playoffs? Everyone would be like, yeah, that's fine.
I don't think it matters how. We just got to get up there. It's not going to be as pretty as the 18-19 season. I think maybe before the start, again, like I said at the start, with the retained list and stuff, maybe we felt it was going to be, but no, it's not going to be that pretty. I think we just have to get up in any means possible. I mean, I see people saying we're not going to make the playoffs, and I personally don't agree with that. I think we will definitely get in the playoffs, even with the kind of injury list we've got now. I think I don't want to live to regret this comment, but 100% confident we will be in those playoffs. And hopefully by then we have the likes of Jarvis, Dawson, you know, and people like Lapsley fit. And I think if you look at the players we've got in our squad, if you have them all fit by the playoffs, then I would be more than confident that we can go and win that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the point about Dawson, and, you know, I was unsure about Dawson when he signed for us last season. I think, he's been injured. He's come from Gloucester, of all places. But he was brilliant. I don't know whether he was carrying the injury and we signed, you know, I would have a question if we knew he was going to have some surgery and then we signed him anyway.
Yeah.
That being said, maybe that's how Johnston gets people to be loyal to him. You know, he says, look, you have a contract here. You can come back in December or whenever it might be, and we'll go from there. Jarvis is a big would be a big miss for any team in this division. With this possible exception of Yeovil, but that's only because they've signed five strikers.
Yeah, they've got strikers coming out there is.
Yeah, and I think our pattern of play was designed to revolve around Jarvis, and that's why after he left, we took our time to kind of figure out how to score goals. I think when you've got Stobbs and Collins, the intention is always to get the ball in for Jarvis. Yeah. Ash isn't going to be that guy.
No, and that's
the football
that's what
we've been playing has been pretty good recently.
Yeah, I was definitely improving. Yeah, from
considering where we were early doors, it's so much better.
I mean, it couldn't have got much worse, but it is definitely getting better. And yeah, I think we've probably been forced into that a little bit as well with the lack of Jarvis. We can't play that long ball game as much. You know, we simply can't play long ball to Ash. Do you know what I mean? So yeah. I think that it's I'm not in any way saying that the Jarvis injury has helped. It hasn't. But hopefully when Jarvis comes back, we continue to play better football, even though we have him back and we don't revert back to that kind of start of the season style. But yeah, I mean, if we can carry on playing better football with Jarvis back, hopefully at some point, yeah, Dawson rises from the dead and he'll play as well. But it's yet to be seen.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think we've covered the three games.
Yeah.
Your video has just kind of gone out of sync with your voice, which is a little bit weird, but that's okay.
I lost you slightly there as well, but I can hear you again now.
But we are professionals here at Talking Talkie.
Yeah.
Was it Talkie Talk? Anyway, it's Talking Talkie, isn't it? So this weekend, we get to go to Frome, which is pronounced Frome. It's not pronounced Frome because I've done the research, which is a town in England, in the FA Trophy, which is a competition, and I think I did the preview for the last round when it was Yeovil. I said, I do not care about this competition. If we find ourselves in the semi-final and there's a chance of a Wembley appearance, we'll be like, oh, good, the FA Trophy, some money. But I think it's important to put in a good performance. I'd like to keep the run going. But if
definitely,
we end up getting penalties, I wouldn't be too upset.
No, I think it's one of them, isn't it? There's, you know, I think I personally would like us to win it. I think that, yeah, whilst the trophy run isn't the priority this year, by all means, I do think just keeping that winning form going, I don't think it'll be an easy game whatsoever. You know, they are a very good side in that league. I know one or two that play for them, and yeah, they play good football. They will get the ball down. I don't think they'll be afraid to try and play against Torquay. I mean, I live, like I said, about 20 minutes away, and the weather has been absolutely horrendous. So I would fear a little bit for their pitch. So it'd be interesting to kind of see how that holds up. I mean, with the tickets they're selling, they'll do everything possible to make sure that's on. But yeah, and it's a nice ground. You know, it's a new place for us to go as Torquay fans as well. It's not a new place for me. I've actually played there once. So
I'll get you.
So, yeah, I know. Yeah, I know that. And it's another reason why my phone is on loud. I know the ground. I know the place. I think I should be given the opportunity. It shouldn't be this shouldn't be the only Torquay debut I'm making this week.
What happens if Frome Town call you?
Oh,
can you play against Torquay?
I'll go there as well. Own goal from a corner. Don't make it look obvious. Nice. And we're through.
That's the correct answer.
But yeah, I think it will be I genuinely think it will be a reasonably tough game. I think, you know, like Dan's saying in the press call, they're right at the top of, I think, is it Southern Division One? So two below us. They're right at the top of that. So yeah, I think, you know, that like sides of that level are no mugs. They'll have players that have played higher, that can play higher. And yeah, I think it'll be a tough game. It'll be interesting to see how we line up, obviously, with the kind of injuries that we've talked about so far. We probably don't have lots of options in terms of a lineup. And obviously, the other one to mention is Archer, who will be cup tied. So yeah, we probably haven't got lots of options in terms of how we can line up, and unless we bring someone in that time. But it may be that Callum Thomas gets a start in defence for the first time, which might be a good opportunity for him to get that chance in a game like that as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we don't really have the kind of squad that would warrant us rotating. But as much as we're able to, I mean, even, you know, is there a way we can give Dean Moxie the night off?
Yeah, I think we should do everything possible to. And if Lapsley's 50-50, I wouldn't want to risk him either. So yeah, I think it's a great opportunity to to give it a go, but equally give chances to people that don't normally play. I'm not a Ryan Hansen fan, but that's probably a good game for Ryan Hansen. And people
yeah,
like
she
that
was okay when he came on the other day, I thought.
Yeah, true. I struggle with Ryan Hansen, to be honest. I him and McGavin, I had in a similar kind of in a similar thought last season, and obviously McGavin has now pushed on, which is great to see, and is scoring good goals quite regularly. But yeah, I mean, the likes of Hansen, Thomas, maybe even Lovett in goal. Have we lost the Polish keeper now? With
yeah,
the name
I think he's
not
gone. I think he was an emergency loan. I think he's gone.
That, I mean, that's just the best Talking United record you could have.
One game, yeah. One clean sheet. Thanks very much.
Yeah, one penalty saved. Yeah, thanks for coming. So, I think it's a great chance for kind of those fringe players. Not that we have many fringe players because most people are having to play, but I think it's a great chance to start them. But equally, I would like to give it a go. I think it's fun, isn't it? Seeing who we're going to get in the next round, seeing what the draw is.
I think it's different if we were in the National League because you'd feel confident this is a competition that you can win.
Yeah, or at least kind of push on to getting a good semi-final or something. Yeah.
I mean, you're going to need a kind draw to get to the latter stages. I mean, we've had a pretty good draw so far. I mean, Yeovil aside. Actually, that was probably our first game. But, you know, you think Frome's a good draw, but then you go next week and you get Chesterfield away in the next round. You think, well, that was a waste of time because we're never going to win up there. But, you know, I think it's good that we're playing better and that we're higher up in the table. I'd be very concerned if we were going there and we were 14th in the table. Because how often do you see a high-flying lower division side be an underperforming side from a division above? It happens.
I don't know who, but I've got a feeling they've already knocked one out as well. Or maybe they knocked one out last year. I'm not sure. But they'll fancy it. They'll have seen that, you know, Torquay have struggled a little bit this year. They're obviously high-flying. I think they're in a very similar position to Wimborne, who we played in. Was it the trophy or I think it was the FA Cup, wasn't it? Early rounds.
Yeah.
I know we won that game fairly convincingly, but I think there'll be a similar standard to that. So, you know, we
beat
Worthing
in the last round of this competition.
That's the one. Yeah, that's the one. So
Worthing hammered us 3-0, didn't they?
Yeah, I was at that game and I thought Worthing were a very good side. I know they've struggled since then, which I was surprised at.
And this is the thing with this division, like, oh, everyone could beat everyone else. And you think, okay, yeah, but you say that, but it really can't, because we beat Welling, 5-1, and they beat Yeovil 4-1.
I know, I know Yeovil beat Bath 1-0 last night, but a few people that were there said Yeovil didn't look great, and Bath probably, if they'd been more clinical, could have got a result. Probably the same as when Bath came down to us as well. If they'd been a bit more clinical, they maybe could have got a result there as well. So yeah, I think everyone can beat everyone, as we've seen. So I wouldn't say. I'm not, you know, overly hopeful that we can win the league, but I equally don't think it's out of reach. I think if we get on a good run, keep putting pressure on and get to kind of February, March, having consistently got good results, then I don't think we'll be out of touching distance, to be honest.
No, I mean, we even saw the last time we were in this division where, Woking were champion elect at one point and we pulled it back. You know, I think the gap was 12 points at one point to Yeovil. It was 5 points until last night. So straight away, you're kind of in their head a little bit. I make the mistake of looking at some of the various talking forums and everyone's like, we're never going to catch Yeovil. Like, we're not going to catch 12 points overnight, but we win a game and they draw a game. That's 2 points. Mm-hmm. You do that 3 or 4 times and suddenly you're close. And then you have to pay them again.
I think what we do need to start doing is, I saw an interesting stat last night that we haven't actually beaten a team away in the top half of the division yet, whereas Yeovil have won every game they've played away from home against the top half. So I think that's obviously an area we need to address away from home. Our home form's not bad, but, you know, if our away form was like our home form, we'd be right up there. But I think that's probably an area we need to address. You know, what is going wrong when we play away from home in the kind of inverted commas bigger games? That's probably an area we need to look at. And if we can kind of address that, and if we, you know, I'm not saying we're going to win every game, but if we can consistently over the next couple of months regularly win games, I really don't think we will be out of touching distance, because Yeovil have shown they're not invincible. I don't think it's all over. Let's just say that.
No, I mean, what do we have? 25 games left?
A long time. A lot of points to play for.
I could see us getting to 85, 90 points. Fairly comfortably. This is famous last words, I know.
Yeah.
And obviously, Yeovil are already halfway to that total, but I don't think it's all over just yet. It's just that we can't keep looking at that table. I mean, I do it myself. I'm looking at it now. Like, ooh,
yeah,
well,
yeah, all the time.
Yeah, like Maidstone, not Maidstone, Hampton and Richmond, we were above them until the 88th minute the other day because they equalised against whatever team they were playing, and now we're in fourth. Like,
yeah,
no need for me to do that, but I can't help myself.
No,
I guess we'll see where we are after the Christmas period. I think we play 5 games between now and the new year, something crazy like that. So
it was like whenever we won a game, right, which was rare, but whenever we used to win a game occasionally last season, my immediate reaction was to go and see the points on the playoffs and see how many behind we were. And we all thought how that worked out. But it's funny how the mind works when you're looking at football tables.
Yeah. So, all right. So the Froome game is Saturday, 3 o'clock, 10 o'clock Eastern, if you happen to be in America, or 7 o'clock Pacific, if you happen to be in California, like I know some of our number are.
Yeah, I think it'll be a good crowd as well. So it should be a good day. And yeah,
it's probably the biggest game they've had there. And you know, again, that's not arrogance. It's a fairly local team. It's a team with, you know, we have been a league team for still the majority of our history, although I'd probably call us a National League side now, based on the last 20 years or so. So it's going to be a good day out, number one. I mean, yeah, definitely, it's a kind of event that you almost low stakes. Like if you go there and you don't win, it's not the end of the world. You just hope that there's a decent performance and you can have a good day out. So when I'm going to talk about the following league game, which I think is Hemel Hempstead.
Yeah, 16th. Yeah, Hemel Hempstead. No midweeker next week, which is good. Yeah.
We expect to have a podcast between, you know, Saturday and that other game. But I did want to talk about a couple of things that have been in the news talking related recently. The first thing is the exclusive Torbay Weekly interview with Clark Osborne.
Did you have a chance to read this? Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to talk about that. I mean, the adverts on that are annoying enough. And then you get I think it was about 20 paragraphs. And yeah, it was kind of a Clark Osborne biography for large parts of it, wasn't it? Which, yeah, it comes back to, I would kind of link it to the club, that kind of infamous club statement that came out about 11 o'clock at night. My initial reaction to that was, what do you genuinely think, sitting there clicking post on that fans are going to think? And I kind of relate that to this. What do you actually think, you know, when you post that, when Torbay Weekly posts that, what do they think the reaction is going to be to that? That's genuinely what I would... I can't see how you could have thought that was going to be positive. I mean, I think at one point he even talked about where his daughter went to university. I mean...
He's doing a master's in sports psychology. I don't give a shit what his daughter's doing.
I was going to say, I honestly couldn't care less. And I think that Matty Hayward wrote a really good piece on kind of questions that could have been asked. And I don't think one of them was. Yeah, so like you say, I really couldn't care less where his daughter is at university. And kind of, you know, which the fact that he's a petrol head, I think they called him. Again, I don't care. My girlfriend is kind of very into her sustainability, so she probably wouldn't have liked that. But I just think that it was such a good opportunity, actually. And I'm sure it probably helped that the kind of pressure from the Supporters Trust that we got that opportunity. And then, you know, even if you don't want to ask particularly difficult questions, there's still kind of questions that you could have asked without overly pissing him off, I believe. And, you know, none of it was really covered. And then there was the bizarre second article that came out not long after, titled "Where Would Torquay Be Without Osborne?" And that seemed kind of a backlash at the comments that had been received on the first one. But yeah, what did you think?
I mean, I it was a poor article. I think Torbay Weekly have a pretty cozy relationship with the club. I think they are behind the Torbay story thing, even though it reads to me like Torbay's Tory, which again is a whole other thing. It was definitely a reaction to some of the pushback they've got from the Trust. And I think the Trust have been very good in the past few weeks about trying to hold the management and the ownership accountable. I'm in the Trust, full disclosure. I did attend most of the AGM last week, and nothing in there is anything but very respectful. They've always said they want to work with the club. They don't want to work against the club. Some of the things that Osborne said when he came in about having local directors and having a fans forum, none of it's ever happened. And
no,
I kind of I'm aware that I'm probably treading on ground because I've had this rant before, but it really isn't hard to build up goodwill with fans. Just talk to us. Tell us what you want to do. Don't treat us like morons. Have the respect, because at the end of the day, we're the ones supporting the club. And I know the club is a loss maker. I understand that. And I think Jim Parker's second article was covering that. Well, if we didn't have Clark Osborne, who would have been paying the bills? I don't know. I don't know who else was lined up. Was there anybody lined up? Because it was never discussed. I think when you do have that cozy relationship with a news outlet, I would be amazed if they hadn't sent the questions ahead of time.
Yeah,
these are the questions that we will answer. Yes, yes, yes. Oh, no, we're not going to answer any questions about Gary Johnson, or we're not going to ask any questions about the fans forum, you know, or whatever it might be. And it was pointless.
It feels the same with the fans forum as well. Like, so the fans forum has been set up. Again, I agree with you. The Tusters has been great. I'm also a Tust member. And yeah, I think that the fact that online fans forum has been set up is great. And hopefully that will help in some way. But again, it's questions being sent in advance. So it's so hard to actually get a proper picture. What questions will be answered? I know fans have definitely sent difficult questions in, and I would be very surprised if they get answered. Again, I don't think much on Gary Johnson will be answered. I think that, yeah, I genuinely think that kind of hard questions will probably again be avoided. I know, obviously, the other thing that, again, the Tust have really helped with is the, what's the official title? Is it Supporters Steering Group? I think that's the title.
The Steering Committee, maybe?
Steering Committee, there we go. And again, it kind of yet to be seen who will be a part of that. It's going to be democratically elected, I'm told. But again, I don't know. I don't know how kind of names get put in the hat for that. I saw the Tust statement today about it aligning with the fan advisory board. I'm not an expert on those things. But yeah, I think it will be just interesting to see how members are elected into that. But I think, you know, the Tusts are just keen to move forward, aren't they? And to actually build relationships. And yeah, so hopefully this is the start of you know, of that journey, and we'll see where it takes us.
I would hope so. I think because he's been around for, 5 years now, and none of this has happened until now, it's only now that the supporters, not just the Trust, but the Trust are a part of it, are putting pressure on them. I think they were startled into action when there was talk about protest. I don't know how big that protest was. I also didn't particularly like calling out the chairman of the Trust by name in the statement they said. Like, it wasn't like the chairman was saying, let's get your pitchforks and torches, lads, we're going down.
Exactly, yeah.
That wasn't it. And, you know, I think in some ways Osborne's fortunate that he's not at a club that's a lot more strident with fans. I mean, Torquay is quite sleepy in some ways. The home fans do tend to be older than they might be at other places. You know, it's a gross generalisation, but I know our away support is second to none because a lot of the fans move away and follow from afar, which means that, the you know, we have quite a few retirees, and we have, you know, an older support base at Plainmoor. It's not hard. Look, I get it's hard to make money from a football club. In fact, it's almost impossible, which is why the way to do it is to not just have a football club, is to have all of the attendant revenue streams. I get that. But it is very easy to build up some goodwill. All you have to do is talk to people. And again, I've said this on the podcast before. Plainmoor starting to look a bit run down. Okay, fine. If you had a decent relationship with the Trust and said, hey, we could do with some people to help us paint a few walls.
Oh, yeah. You would definitely get people to pay them.
And you get people involved. And I think, I don't know what the long-term future is of the Trust. And, you know, their stated ambitions right now are not to ever be owners. But you only have to look up the road to see what can be done when you've got a fully engaged Trust allowed to have a say in the running of the club. Obviously, that's just an example because they own the club. But even at Wrexham, I mean, Wrexham would not be in the position now if the Trust hadn't stepped in and saved that club.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is kind of getting into a broader philosophical conversation about football in England, but you know, we're never going to be Arsenal. We're never going to be Manchester United. And I think we're better for it. Those clubs are listed on, you know, public stock exchanges. They're owned by billionaires, which is a thing, apparently. clubs at our level, you know, anything really from League One below, they have to be community projects. They have to be embedded in the community, and they have to offer value outside of just watching football, because any of those, what is it, 92 league clubs, so 44, so any of those 48 clubs, none of them are going to have football as good as the top two divisions. They're just not, because they're not paying the money and they don't have the players. But they can become important in their communities in ways that I think a lot of Premier League fans feel increasingly disconnected from.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, you know, I make fun of Sam Drew, right? I like Sam. He's a good boy. He's in the trust. You know, he's part of their committee. He's a West Ham fan and he's a Torquay fan, right? I think that's the model that we're going to get. We have a couple of people in the, you know, as well. Sam Swan, I think, is a Leicester fan. And he's a Torquay fan. And that's how you build up the fan base. It's not practical to just have people who are Torquay fans. I'm one of them, but that's because I live far away. Most people, either for Torquay will be their second club, or at least one of a couple. If you can provide a different experience at your local club than what the people can get from, you know, Sam's not going to watch West Ham every week. It's too expensive. It's too far away. But he loves watching Torquay because it's his local side and he cares what happened. That's what you need to happen. And, you know, again, on the community aspect, if you have a strong club with a strong ownership and a strong sense of the community, you can do a lot better in the community than just play football. I was talking to you before we started about every time I go back to Torquay and Torbay, parts of it seem kind of run down. And I think there's a sense of depression in some cases. And again, I'm only visiting once every year or so. But I think if you've got a strong community sense and spirit, which can come from the football club and come from elsewhere, then the place starts to feel a little bit more optimistic. And I think you can turn it around. And Clark Osborne has not shown any interest in doing that. His ambition from the beginning has been to make money. Okay, fine. I don't begrudge a guy making some money if he's doing things the right way. If he had done it in the correct way, I'd be like, absolutely, you can get me without playing more. You can redevelop it and make a few million pounds. I don't care. But you have to have the building blocks first. You have to build the goodwill. And you have to demonstrate that you have an honest intention to help the area that you are investing in. And he has yet to do that. Not just at Torquay, but at Poole and Swindon and Bristol.
I know. And it's interesting seeing what some of those fans say as well. And it does seem to echo a lot what the Torquay fans say. And yeah, like you say, I don't think it's massively difficult to show that you care. And I mean, you don't even really necessarily have to, but just showing you care is not difficult. Like you say,
at least make a convincing effort to pretend that you care.
Yeah, exactly. You know, even if deep down you don't, like, it can be a front, but at least talk to people, like show the views of what is the sort of most valuable stakeholder in a football club, which is the fans. And make them feel valued. You know, as a business, you need to make stakeholders feel valued. As a football club, therefore, the fans are, I would argue, the most important one. So, yeah, I really don't kind of understand the logic behind being silent with that. I think it'll be interesting as well. Who answers these kind of forum questions? I know it's going to the board, but yeah, again, not sure Osborne will even answer those questions or even really be involved in that. And again, with the supporter steering committee, I imagine maybe George Edwards will be involved in that. Again, I don't think Clark Osborne will be showing his face much at them. So, no. Yeah.
I will say on George Edwards, like, I don't know him. I've never met him. I do think it's to his credit that when fans have confronted him at games, he has attempted to engage with them. Yeah. Now, how constructive those engagements are, I don't know. But, I've seen several pictures. I forget which game it was, but people spoke to him.
Richmond, I think it was.
You know, I think he could have just scarpered. You know? And I think a lot of people probably would have done. So I think he deserves a little bit of credit for that. I did enjoy one quote in that Torbay Weekly article where Clark Osborne says his passion is building projects. Like, you haven't fucking built anything. The only thing you've ever done for Torquay on a building site, on a building sense, is take a picture of somebody else's stadium rendering and Photoshop a very bad Torquay United badge on it. If you saw that.
I mean, it's yet to be seen kind of whether actually he will be engaging more with the club now. But, you know, it's definitely a slightly less bleak situation, and it shows there is some kind of that kind of sit-in protest or stand-in protest with the sense of the pop side. Yes, there may not have been that many people there, but actually it's clearly had a bit of an impact, because I don't think we'd have been getting those statements that we got without having that. And I know, obviously, I think you have to have some sort of steering group committee now in the National League and above. So whether the club also feel that they can, maybe kind of kill two birds with one stone in that sense, please the fans and get something, which they would have to have if we do hopefully go up. I'm not, again, an expert on that, but I think that is the case. I think you do have to have some sort of fan engagement at National League and above. So whether the club have taken that into account, but it's clear, I think, that the pressure from Tusks has had an impact. So, yeah, I mean, all credit goes to them, really, and everyone that has helped with that.
Yeah, I would urge anybody to join the Tusks. I think they're approaching 500 members
500,
now.
500, yeah.
Last I heard. I don't think it's unreasonable to expect the Tusks to be 1,000. We're getting 2,000 most weeks, and that doesn't include a lot of the people who don't go to home games for whatever reason. So I think 1,000 is a reasonable amount. And all that means is that we have the Trust have a bigger voice with which to go to the club. I think one of the arguments against the Trust in the past has been, well, you only represent a minority of the fans. And that's been fair. Probably because the club have no interest in helping the Trust build more people. If I was in charge of the club, I'd absolutely tell people, you should join the Trust. Come to watch Talk United, but join the Trust, because as the owner, I will not be here forever. You guys will. Okay, individually, you probably won't be, because you're not going to live to be 200, but as a group, people will be around to support this club, and that's why they have to have a voice. So I think that's probably enough on the Torway Weekly thing, because I feel like I've, after saying not wanting to get on my soapbox, I feel like I leapt up there and ranted for 5 minutes.
Yeah, I think we've covered it pretty well. Yeah. And also the kind of Tusk statement and things like that. So just hopefully, as it goes forward, we do see some positivity. And I just hope that in that forum, some actual questions that we want answered, the questions that, like I say, that Matty alluded to in his article, I just hope, they're obviously not all going to be answered, but hopefully at least some of those burning questions which we're thinking about day to day will be answered. And, we can live in hope, but let's see what comes out.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I think the deadline for submissions to that email address was yesterday. But I suggested when we found out about it, like, copy the Trust in your responses, because it would be very interesting for them to say, look, we know of 40 questions that were asked.
Yeah.
They asked 5. Yeah, and the ones they didn't answer were all things about this, this, and this. I don't know if Trust will do that. I don't know if anybody else had a similar idea to me, but I think you'll find out pretty quickly how genuine this effort on the part of the club will be.
Yeah.
And if it's not genuine, it's not going to go well for them, because people won't stand for it. Yes, it's expensive to run the club, and yes, Osborne has popped up the club for whatever reason, who knows. In his munificence, he might decide to depart stage left and leave the club holding the bag. I don't know. But without engaging the fans, there's never going to be a realistic exit for him.
Yeah, I think they've got to understand, the harder the question you answer, the more respect you will gain as a result. And so actually, if they do take on those big questions, they're going to gain way more respect, and people are going to respect what they put in place. So
if they're asked the question, what's happening with the stadium, and they say, well, we'd hope to do this, but we've had to get back to the drawing board, we expect it's going to take a longer time, it's a non-answer, but it's still an answer.
Yes.
I'm picking out another thing from the other day, sorry. Talking about how the politics in the area haven't helped him. It's South Devon politics. They're never going to help you. Like, if you like the group we have now, wait 2 years. The next bunch of idiots will come along anytime soon. Mm-hmm. That's probably a bit unfair to people who do work in local politics. But it's cyclical. If you don't like the people you have now, wait for the next bunch, because they'll probably be more helpful. All right, so I am going to leave that there now. After having said I was going to leave it there 10 minutes ago and carried on, the last thing I wanted to cover was Sean Donnellan.
Because
there's a very heavy suggestion going around the forums and the internet right now that he is looking to leave. I think the latest I heard is that he's deciding between Wealdstone and Dagenham.
Yeah, I haven't heard Wealdstone. I know Dagenham is the one I've heard. I mean, I think if we can get money for Sean Donnellan, then we should 100% do that. I think, you know, I'm not necessarily an anti Sean Donnellan. If he was available, I would have him in the team that we currently have. However, I personally do not feel he is good enough, or I don't think anyone that we currently really have is good enough to be warranting, you know, if the rumors are true, and it's hard to say because nothing's been confirmed, but if the rumors are true, he is in no way good enough to be saying, you know, I'm not going to play, I'm too good for this, and I need to get a better contract. And yeah, I think there's no evidence that he is that player. And to be honest, I don't think we have a player like that. So yeah, I don't know, like I say, if the rumours are true. But if they are, and if we can get money for Sean Donnellan, I think that would be a very good bit of business, because I don't think anyone would have said that expected us to get to sell probably any player for money this year, but definitely not Donnellan.
No, I mean, I think, and it was just a thing I just saw like 3 minutes ago, where the reason he's not been playing is because the agent asked him not to play for fear of injury, that would scupper the move, which I can kind of understand. Right. If we get money, and he's under contract, so we would be entitled to some money, not very much, presumably. That's a coup for us. I like Donnellan. I think he's been an honest player for us. I think he's been one of the least bad players we've had in the past 18 months or so. He's made a few very bad mistakes, but I think he's shown a willingness to adapt and be playing anywhere.
Yeah, he is versatile, isn't he?
Yeah. I mean,
he's the sort of player you need at this sort of time with the injuries, where he can play.
Yeah.
You can put him in midfield, you put him right back, you could probably play him at centre half. I personally quite liked him at right back. I thought he was okay there.
Yeah.
Not convinced in midfield, but I think he is a versatile player who would be useful. But I mean, if his head's not in it, and he's decided that his future lies elsewhere, then, and yeah, like you say, if the agent is involved telling him not to play, then fair enough. But yeah, personally, I don't know how kind of what impact he'll have in the National League. I'm not saying I don't think he can play there, but he's not going to be a world beater in the National League, I personally don't think. So if we can get money for him this year, then yeah, I don't think, like you say, I think that's probably a good bit of business.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of it depends on what we do next. If we just take 10 grand off Dagenham or whoever it might be and go, thanks very much, and then struggle without a replacement for the next 6 months, that's a problem. But if we say, okay, well, now we have a little bit of room in the budget, we can bring in a dedicated right back rather than playing Marshall. Or we can bring in a bit of backup up front when Theo Williams goes back to Fleetwood. Or maybe we can see if we can bring Dolan back and offer to pay a bit more of his wages on loan. You know, it's what happens next that defines whether or not it's a good move for me. If we do nothing, then it's a bad move, because you did have a player and now you don't have a player. If you're able to replace him with somebody equally as good or better, then it's a great move. And I would, you know, I don't ever begrudge people leaving Torquay. I think if your ambition in football is to only play for Torquay United, then that's not great. Like, we love this little crappy team of ours, but it's not the pinnacle of football. And that's why even when Cameron left, I think did it in a dickish way, but you don't begrudge anybody leaving, especially for more money in what's a very short career. It was very gratifying to see Armani Little and Connor Lemonhay Evans play the other day in the FA Cup.
Yeah, Wimbledon, yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
And Jamie Reid, obviously, is the big one. I mean, seeing Jamie Reid,
I saw Will, what's his name? Who's the guy who scored against Derby in the Cup for us? He scored the other day.
Oh, Goodwin. Will Goodwin. Yeah.
He scored the other day for Cheltenham.
Yeah.
Also stood at Bob Street amazingly. I didn't think he could hit water and fell out of a boat. But yeah, it's amazing that these players do move on. I think, again, in many ways, it's to Gary Johnson's credit that he's got these players who were going nowhere in their careers, really. Aaron Nemain is another one. There's a talk about Aaron Nemain going to a higher league. Like, what?
Yeah, Joe Lewis as well.
He should have scored on Monday, actually, but he shanked it from about 3 yards out. But yeah, so again, Donnellan, if Donnellan leaves, we'll say goodbye, have a nice life, thanks very much, but not really shed too many tears, especially if we are able to bring in an able-bodied replacement.
Definitely. I agree with that.
Okay, so I'm aware that we've got to about an hour. That's going to be difficult for, to edit if we cut half of it out. is there any other business, Tom, that you think we should mention today?
No, not really. I mean, just the last positive kind of on the playing side of things is that we've scored three early goals in the last three games. Kind of first 15 minutes, I believe, of the last three games, we've been 1-0 up. So I think that's great, because actually I think a lot of our problems was that we were going 1-0 down and we were struggling from there and we couldn't get back into games.
It makes it so much more difficult when you're behind after 20 minutes.
Yeah, and so I actually think we're clearly coming out the blocks a lot better, and I think that is massively helping us win games. You know, you come out the blocks fast and get a goal, you're the team on the front foot, and yeah, I think that's really helped us. So long may that continue. So yeah, that would be my last point.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. It's it makes a nice change, because again, and most of the games, especially on Saturdays, I'm listening to on the radio or following on Twitter, and it's like we've gone a goal down again. Like now we've got to score two to win the game. Which I know is very simple maths. But it just makes it so much more difficult. If we're able to score early, then teams have to come towards us. And I think we're better at countering in that way. Our defence is creaky enough that if there's constant pressure on us.
Yeah, I mean, that Collins goal is a good example. We've got an early goal, and then we've countered and got a third when they've been pushing to get back in the game. So, yeah, I really like that. And that's something, sort of scoring early goals isn't something we've seen of Torquay lots in kind of, you know, in recent times. So actually, yeah, I think that's a real positive, and it shows that we are, yeah, I think it just shows we're sharper now, we're a bit more together, and we don't look kind of lost at the start of games like potentially we were at the start of the season. So yeah, happy with that, and hope, yeah, like I say, long may it continue.
All right, well, thank you, Tom. I think it was a stellar debut. It was definitely in the top, I don't know, 20.
there's only 15 in the group chat, aren't there?
Well, yeah, we don't ruin it by saying that. Come on now. hopefully we haven't scared you off, and you'll come back again fairly soon. Although not too soon, because we do want a different rotating cast of panelists each week. People get bored of the same voice every time.
The same voices, yeah. No, I'd love to at some point. And you never know, I might get a game on Saturday. We'll see.
Bring your boots, who knows?
I will, yeah. I'll get in Johnson's in. I mean, it's a pretty it's a pretty close ground, so I can probably get in Johnson's ear before the game and let him know.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll take that very well. He's renowned for taking information from the crowd in good heart.
Well, exactly that. Yeah. So.
Okay, then. All right, well, thank you, Tom, and we'll be back next week for episode 142. Bye-bye.
Thank you.